Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hello, tennis fans. This is Kim Vogley from sunny San Diego, California, where it's actually raining today. Welcome to one of the best pods in Podland, the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to your weekly tennis podcast. And thank you to Kim for introducing your weekly tennis podcast from not so sunny San Diego. I can only assume Kim's intro was recorded at some point in the last week where it rained solidly throughout the San Diego Open. There are lots of reasons to take a tennis tournament to San Diego. I've been and enjoyed it very much, but the weather is pretty much number one on the list of reasons, and it did not deliver as promised last week. Somehow, they got the tournament finished on time, and we'll be talking about that tournament and an extraordinary win for Iga Świątek. Surprise, surprise, folks, she's won a final. But yeah, wasn't sunny San Diego last week, David?
No, I was reading that they have on average each year about 38 days of rain. Well, they managed about six of them during the tournament, which is not exactly what was advertised.
Even when it wasn't raining, it looked like Solihull in November.
I can vouch for that. And another little note that is dear to my heart. Chris Clary of the New York Times was saying that it reminded him of Seattle, and Seattle's home of my favourite American football team, and that apparently they have quite a lot of rain, is what I'm told.
Yes, Washington State is famous for rain, as I understand it, and other wonderful things. Starbucks, Nirvana, generalised culture, but also rain. Matt, I saw you yesterday, but it's good to see you again.
It is. Very nice to see you. And I will add my voice to this, what the hell is going on with the weather in San Diego, because it was annoying. There were very, very short windows to watch tennis when there's an eight-hour time difference, and I don't need 90-minute delays because of rain.
Yes, I think it was Thursday night, wasn't it, when they'd been really kind to us Brits with the schedule. The most eye-catching ones to us were Iga Świątek against Zhongxin Wen and Bianca Andreescu against
Coco Gauff.
Coco Gauff. And they put those back-to-back at the start of the schedule, which, if you're willing to stay up, you know, a little bit later than normal, was sort of perfect viewing time for the UK. Cue 2 hours of watching some people standing around in drizzle while children faffed around with towels. Right in the sweet spot window for British viewing. It was so tennis and so frustrating.
And you could tell that everyone was going mad because the crowd very, very nicely sung happy birthday to Zhongxin Wen during that rain delay. And she was like, great, that's really nice. But also my birthday was like a week ago or something.
That was just a real time filler, wasn't it? And they did spend 25 minutes just sitting there waiting. And look, it's very difficult to know what to do. Do you take them off the court? Do you let them stay there? I was watching that little window. I mean, bear in mind the window is even shorter, smaller when you're 12 that my daughter is. And I was watching it with her, just watching the rain delay. And every time somebody, like the umpire, went out onto the court with the towel and put it under the foot and sort of dragged it over the line, she burst out laughing, thought it was the funniest looking thing.
Well, that's the appropriate reaction. It is ludicrous. We should all be laughing every time that happens. And that laughter should lead to us going, is there a better way we could be doing this, tennis? Should we be looking at this? I mean, if we all added up the number of minutes, hours and days that we've spent looking at a screen, watching people stand around with towels under their feet, I think we would be alarmed and depressed at the figure that would emerge. Anyway, let's not dwell there much longer. Let's talk about the tennis that happened, some of which we were actually able to watch, folks. Iga Świątek, the winner in San Diego, beating qualifier Donna Vekic 6-3, 3-6, 6-love in the final. And given that this time exactly a week ago, we were all predicting that she would probably pull out of San Diego as a result of playing in the final in Ostrava last week. I was out of the habit. I find this to be a pretty extraordinary victory. I know she got a late start at the tournament, didn't she? She had pretty much 3 days, but given the, you know, given the time zone change, the surface change, all of it, I find it pretty amazing, even for Iga Świątek.
And on paper, the people she had to beat along the way, Zheng Xinwen early on, to Coco Gauff, to Jessica Pegula, these are really, really, these are the good players that are showing up week after week and have been on the scene all tournament long. And with that time change, I just thought, crikey, that's a big ask for Świątek, but she's got the bit between her teeth now. She wants it so much. She reminds me of her in the spring, that desperation, that ruthlessness to just win. She just will win at all costs. And once she finds her way, she's relentless. I mean, I think she beat Coco Gauff for the loss of 3 games. She just targets that weakness, doesn't she, on the forehand side, and she will just pummel it. And I don't know, I think we've seen her kind of have her second wind of the year now. And, I mean, a week ago, you know, we were talking about her losing in a final against Barbora Krejcikova, and it was pointed out to me that the emotion she showed afterwards was that in some ways happiness at the moment. She's enjoying the experience. It's not, she wasn't upset about losing as such as just sort of being emotional that she's got to this point and that she's involved in these occasions. And her appetite all week long was not the appetite that I associate with a player who's dominated the first part of the year. Usually I expect to see somebody flagging at this point of the year. She is not that person right now.
Matt, I found pretty much all of her matches this week quite fascinating for different reasons. I loved the Zheng Xinwen match, and that's two matches that they've played this year. Both of them have been close and intriguing. Obviously, the first of them at the French Open when Zheng took that opening set against Świątek on a tiebreak and then not long after ended up retiring from the match with what we later learned were period-associated pains and difficulties. And now this one where they also were split sets and it went down to a decider which ended up playing out this time. And I just think their games match up brilliantly. Yes, it's a potential rivalry that I am touting. One of a few from this week. And then we had the Coco Gauff matchup, which I thought was going to be a Coco Gauff, Andy Murray voice getting closer moment. And she's maybe not getting closer, but then we had Jessica Pegula, who maybe is getting closer to Iga Świątek. And then we had the final against Donna Vekic, who was a qualifier, managed to take a set off her. Let's focus on the Pegula and the Gauff matches. Why is Pegula getting closer and Gauff not?
Good question. I mean, I think Jessica Pegula will be cursing the rain, because that very much intervened in her match against Iga Świątek. She'd taken the first set. Pegula had won four games in a row to take that first set. Świątek was unraveling a bit, to be honest. She was very, very error-strewn in those games. And then the rain came and Świątek said she went indoors, did some crosswords and came out and was just on it again. And I think the truth is Świątek has a gear that is higher than anything Pegula can find. And if Pegula is playing well and Świątek isn't, Pegula is definitely capable of taking advantage, as she did in that first set. But that was a trait of all of Świątek's matches that you've just listed. She had a gear, an acceleration that no one else was able to live with. It was most evident, I think, in the final against Donna Vekic, which I'm sure we'll come on to. Just the most incredible third set she played right when it was a bit tight. And in the Goff match, she started in that gear. And I think maybe that's a sign of real respect that Coco Gauff, you know, is a coming player. She knows she needs to be absolutely on top of her game right from the start, just as she was in that French Open final. It had a very similar feel, that match. It was just kind of over before it even started because Świątek was so much better from the start. As David said, she's able to target that Coco Gauff forehand, and that is a weakness in a way that I don't think Jessica Pegula has those sorts of weaknesses. She maybe doesn't have the real strengths, but she's a much harder player to target because she's solid everywhere, Pegula. So I think those matches are going to be close. But yeah, it's been an interesting week for sort of what we think of as rivalries because, you know, on paper, Pegula and Świątek have now played four times this year. That is what we want. We want players to constantly be playing each other. And Gauff and Świątek have played each other three times now, except Świątek's won all seven of those matches and only dropped one set. It doesn't feel like the sort of compelling rivalries that we're really hoping for. Maybe we're being picky, or maybe Świątek's just so much better than the rest of the field at the moment. It's up to the rest to lift their game.
And it has been pointed out to us that a lot of great rivalries or good rivalries start out one-sided in one direction or the other, so that we shouldn't give up on Świątek Gauff and Świątek Pegula as a rivalry. I'm not giving up on it. I just, you know, as things stand at the moment, it's an unrivalry, isn't it? And then, you know, to take the borrowing of Chris Clary's brilliant phrase further, you know, it can be the case that these early stages of rivalries end up being, you know, completely defining. And I know Maria Sharapova won her first two meetings against Serena Williams, but then she never won again. And the baggage that she accumulated in those matches and the sort of muscle memory for both of them of winning and losing ended up just sort of extrapolating and snowballing. So it can go either way. How much hope, David, do you hold out for these three? Let's throw Zheng Xinwen into the mix.
Yeah,
as well, because that one does hold a lot of promise.
I would say so, and I don't see what her obvious weakness is, and I also think she has an upper level that can. I think she can keep getting better and probably elevate her level somewhere near to what Świątek has, just in terms of ability with a racket. I don't think Pegula has that. I don't think she's ever going to have that. She is what she is, and it's very, very good. I think Matt's put that perfectly. Gauff, maybe she can iron out those issues with the forehand, but my word, there's some ironing out to do. There are certain players that I think do have the raw materials that could live with Świątek when they're at the best. Bianca Andreescu is one of them. She's won the US Open. She played Coco Gauff for a spell where Andreescu was unplayable. She was setting a breakdown, and suddenly from 3-4, she played half a dozen games that made you remember how amazing she is when she's on her game. Now, if she could package that and be that more often against Świątek, she would be at that sort of level. The difference is the mental strength and ferocity and relentlessness of Świątek. She is not just a great ball striker and tennis player. She is a mental giant out there at the moment. She is just destroying people in the way that Novak Djokovic was doing with his rivals 6 years ago. And, I mean, there have been spells since then as well, but at times he just was destroying his nearest rivals because he was just all over them. And that's what she does. She comes to get you from ball one, and it's up to you whether you can live with it. Now, Andreescu has given me flickers of hope in that match and in one or two of the others, but you have to keep doing it. You have to build that mental presence on the tour. So, you know, I mean, to answer your question, at the moment, Świątek is still head and shoulders ahead of most. The critique of a match was interesting, but over the course of the year, what is it, 8 titles now? 64 wins? Fantastic year.
It's officially the best year on the WTA Tour since Serena in 2013 in terms of number of match wins and number of titles. You know, it's an incredible season. I think Kerber in 2016 you would throw in there just because of 2 slams, beating Serena in a final, Olympic silver medal. That was a great season as well. But just, you know, most of the numbers are pointing to this being a better year. And the final against Vekic, I just thought was just a perfect demonstration of how good Świątek has become and how great it is to watch. It almost feels a bit like maybe we're sort of wanting there to be a rivalry. Of course we are. We want there to be a rival. But that isn't to take away from the fact that what Świątek is doing, even without one, I am finding extremely compelling. And I think the final against Vekic did so well to get that to a set all. You know, she played brilliantly in that second set, won the most incredible rally to get the break. There was some controversy in that rally, which maybe we'll come on to as well. But then in the third set, Świątek played as well as she can, just anticipating all of Vekic's shots, getting in the right position. There was a slice forehand winner cross court, which was just an absolute joke. And that is just a level that no one else has at the moment. I'm convinced of that. I think, as you said, Andreescu maybe in the past, Osaka maybe in the past, but right now, when Świątek's playing like that, it's over. Like, 6 love.
On Vekic, quickly, she qualified, as I said. She beat 4 top 25 players in a row to reach that final. Maria Sakkari, Karolina Pliskova, Arina Sabalenka, and Danielle Collins. She was 4-2 down in the deciding set against Danielle Collins. That got rained off and they had to come back the next day, finals day, to finish off that match. Vekic completing the comeback 7-6 in the third and then coming back later that day to play the final. She's back in the top 50, is Vekic, which, you know, given her ability, is absolutely at bare minimum where she should be. She's only 26. She could have plenty of career ahead of her, but where's she been?
She had a big injury, didn't she, I think, last year? Did she have knee surgery, I think?
So is this a reversion to the mean, then? Is this what we should be expecting from Donna Vekic?
I think so. I think she's been top 20, right? You know, she's a great player. And I loved the way she competed this week. You know, when she was down in the final to Świątek, I was thinking, well, I feel like based on what we've seen this week from Vekic, she's going to have a moment. She's going to be able to find some inspiration somewhere because she just kept doing it the entire week against really good players.
Quite interesting as well, actually, that she did cause Świątek some problems. And in that second set, just watching them go toe-to-toe, she's one of these players who will not back off. She will stand on the baseline. She trusts her hands. A little bit like how Jannik Sinner does, you know, this ability to, no matter how hard it's struck at her, she thinks she can do something with it and redirect it. And she's actually talented enough to do it. I mean, obviously, there are major injury issues that she's had. She's 26 years of age. She was 19 in the world. I still think, overall, she has maybe underperformed to what she is capable of doing, talent-wise. And that may still be ahead of her. This is a little snapshot. Sakkari, Pliskova, Sabalenka, Collins. These are excellent wins, and they feel repeatable. Given that it's on a hard court outdoors, there's a lot of outdoor hard court tennis to be played, and she's having to go through qualifying. Well, now she's a top 50 player, so that starts to not become a factor anymore. And if she can have a good run of fitness, maybe this is going to be the best period of her career coming up.
Jessica Pegula, with her run to the semi-finals, became the third direct qualifier for the WTA finals in Fort Worth, Texas. There are still five spots up for grabs and mathematically 17 players that can still qualify, which is going to make for a fun couple of weeks, isn't it? I mean, the tournaments that we've got happening this week... Well, it's just one tournament, isn't it, on the women's side, a 1,000 in Guadalajara, where they've had notable withdrawals, Svantek and Jabeur, who have already qualified for Fort Worth, Kontaveit not playing, but massive week there for, well, 17 players, quite frankly. It is opportunity abound. Only Svantek, Jabeur and Pegula already qualified for the WTA finals. And Pegula is also qualified in the doubles with Coco Gauff. They won the title in the doubles in San Diego. And they've both confirmed, haven't they, that they're going to play the Billie Jean King Cup for the USA come what may at the WTA finals, which, you know, we've heard Iga Świątek's thoughts on the matter. She doesn't think it's in her best interests to do that, given the tight turnaround, the undoubtedly tight turnaround. And we respect and understand that decision, but equally blooming delighted to see that Pegula and Gauff are intending to play both. Just sticking with the WTA for a moment before we move on to ATP, there was also a 250 event this week in Transylvania, the Transylvania Open. And that was won by Anna Blinkova, who qualified and won the title. She beat Wong, Kalinina, Potapova, and finally beat Jasmine Paolini in the final. All of those wins in deciding sets, and that is Anna Blinkova's first career title. And when Matt was at Tennis Podcast Towers yesterday, he said, right, I'm going to find out something about Anna Blinkova. Matt, what have you got?
You just read it all out.
it's quite
I
good.
I thought you were going to have a supplementary nugget. I went on her Instagram to try and find a supplementary nugget, and it's all very pleasant stuff. But I would say no bombshells, nothing worthy of reporting. Just sort of posing in various different places, saying "Have a nice day."
I think she's risen about 40 or 50 places in the rankings with that win. And I just find it really interesting. I mean, that's Blinkova and Vekic who've qualified and gone all the way at these tournaments. And, you know, a couple of months ago, whenever it was, we had Borna Coric just out of nowhere playing the tournament of his life and just winning and beating everybody. I come back to what I said last,
Emma Raducanu.
Oh, yeah. But I come back to what I said last week about form. Where does form come from? I would love to know. I'd love to have a player describe to me what it is like the moment that you hit form that you're not used to having. And I'm not saying that Anna Blinkova hasn't had this sort of form, but I mean, those are good wins, and she's to string them all together and go and win a first career title as a qualifier, that's not normal for you, is it? And she's just hit this hot streak.
Yeah, good on her. Well done, Anna Blinkova. I now follow her on Instagram, so I'll
keep us informed.
I'll keep you up to date. Moving on to the ATP 250s this week. One in Florence, or Firenze, as the locals call it, and as it was described on the various tennis scoring apps, and one in Gijón, in Spain, which is caused quite some pronunciation issues, but we're very confident it's Gijón. In fact, we're certain it's Gijón, both because Matt is a Spanish speaker and because everyone involved with the tournament was calling it Gijón. So let's start in Gijón. It's my new Strava, isn't it? I can feel it happening. Where Andre Rublev won a 12th career title. He beat Sebi Sebastian Korda 6-2, 6-3 in the final. Matt and I watched this final together yesterday. Didn't set our worlds on fire. There was never really a moment where it felt like Andre Rublev wouldn't win. It wasn't a beat down by any means, but it was just a slight golf in class, really. There was no repeatable way for Sebastian Korda to win points, it felt like to me. And as much as he's a very pleasing on the eye player in rallies, Sebastian Korda, really smooth ground strokes, it's difficult to see at the moment. And obviously he's young, he can develop his game, he's got good people around him, not least his Grand Slam winning father. But it's difficult to see what's going to elevate him, you know, to what's going to be the difference maker in his game to give him the jumps up the rankings and the jumps up the sort of career milestones that he's looking to tick off. I'm struggling to see that a little bit at the moment.
I would say we are requiring FANG evidence from him. And that means, from my standpoint, he needed to jump out into this match immediately and not wait for it to happen, not wait to see what his opponent did, because the moment that Andre Rublev took to the court, he was all over him. He Iga Świątek'd him, really. He just went out there.
Hang on, David. Did you watch an Andre Rublev match?
I did watch this one, yeah.
The things you do for this podcast, yeah, and its listeners, David.
I have a hard time watching Rublev, not because I think he's not a good tennis player. He is. But it's the treatment he deals out to himself, the abuse he gives himself. I find it really hard to watch. And look, even in matches that he was winning quite comfortably, he was still doing that, and I still find it problematic. Well, he wasn't doing that in this match because he was just in charge from ball one. And I suppose there's a very fine line between the intensity he brings to the court, which comes to bear on his opponent the way it did against Sebastian Korda, and when he just combusts and deals it out to himself because it's going wrong. But Korda just, I think he's really, really good. And I mean, he beat Andy Murray this week. He got to the final. I think he's got real weight behind his ground strokes, and he loves coming forwards. The moment that he hits a deep shot and he gets a remotely shorter ball, he will come in and he will trust his volleys. And they're actually pretty good. And he's got good touch. He hit a lot of drop shot winners this week. But in the final, you have to elevate, I think. I mean, there's a balance between doing what got you there, but also showing up for a final ready to take over. And that's what Rublev did. Now, Rublev in Grand Slams and 1000s doesn't appear to have the extra gear that you need. Maybe that'll change, but he hasn't shown that it's there yet. Korda needs to get to a final, and he needs to go and watch 10 Świątek finals, I think, and see how she does it. Because she's a different player in the final to how she is the rest of the tournament.
Meanwhile, Andre Rublev is very good in finals of this level. He's sort of the anti-Tsitsipas. 250s and Tsitsipas, we know, has got it in his head. This poor record he has in ATP 500 finals, I think it is, to the extent that after losing a 1000 final, he got confused and said, I've got a terrible record in finals at this level. And I hope someone's pointed out to him that actually at 1000 level, he's doing okay. It's at 500s, he's got work to do. But anyway, not so for Andre Rublev. 12th career title, you know, he reaches par, doesn't he, usually when he plays. He's a great pro week in, week out. He can't get enough of playing tennis. Isn't suffering sort of shock defeats. Is obviously a lot further on in his progression than someone like Sebastian Korda. But it's we know he can win these tournaments. We haven't learned anything new about Andre Rublev this week. And as you said, David, not so in the final. He was actually on, I thought, very good behaviour in the final, but in other matches this week, particularly the Dominic Thiem match in the semi-final, which I watched, encouraging signs, I think, for Dominic Thiem overall, despite losing that match. But, you know, he'd be sort of a set and a break up and miss a forehand and, you know, look like he was about to throw himself to the wolves. You know, just total crisis out of nowhere. And we know how his crises manifest on the court with, you know, self-flagellation. It is a tough watch at times.
And that's why I think the final was encouraging, because there was a moment right at the end, wasn't there, where he had a very simple smash on match point and,
ooh, yes,
and he missed it. And I thought, oh my God, knowing Rublev, how is he going to react to that? And actually, I think he had a really positive reaction in that he kind of laughed it off, rather than directing his anger towards himself. It was like a sort of growth moment, and I was really encouraged to see that. I agree that still there were, you know, his habits were there throughout the week. He's not changed, but I do think he wants to change, and I do think he's trying to change. And if he can, I think it will really help him, because yeah, he was quite loose in that final, and I realized that a lot of the time I watch Rublev when he's not the best player on the court. You know, I very often watch Rublev against kind of his rivals, you know, in the top 10. And in those matches, Rublev can sometimes look a little bit limited, because he maybe doesn't have that extra gear, or he doesn't have the variety in his game necessarily. But in this one, when he's expected to win, I just saw how good he is. Just week in, week out, how good his base level is, and why I think everyone else on the ATP Tour seems to kind of be in awe of his game, don't they? They all talk about how good his forehand is and how cleanly he hits the ball. And he was awesome in this final. Very few errors, lots of winners. And yeah, he just gave Korda very little chance if Korda wasn't going to produce some magic, and he didn't. And yeah, so I think it's Rublev's fourth title of the season. And yeah, as you said, the sort of the progression for him is doing this in Grand Slam quarterfinals or in Masters Series. Mm. But it's confirming who he is, and he's got a great shot at being at the ATP Finals again, I think, for the third year in a row.
Yeah, it was a very grown-up performance from Andrei Rublev in that final. A couple of wins in Gijón for Andy Murray. Big one over Alejandro Davidovich for Kina in the opening round, straight set 7-5, 6-2. And then, you know, your classic Andy Murray epic, 7-6 in the third over Pedro Cachin in the second round before losing out to Korda, 6-1 in the third. So better than where he was at the start of the season, where he was routinely losing in second rounds. He's withdrawn from Antwerp this week, the European Open in Antwerp. Of course, the tournament he won, gosh, would it have been 3 years ago now, that extraordinary win over Stan Wawrinka in the final, his first tournament win, his only tournament win since the hip troubles started to manifest themselves most severely in 2017. He says, we know that the withdrawal from Antwerp is for non-medical reasons.
Yeah, basically, I asked his manager this morning, actually, and he said he was never really intending to play four back-to-back weeks if he did well in them, you know, and to have got to a quarterfinal, you know, is a decent return, and he's got Basel and Paris coming up, and I think he's just got to manage the load really on his body in order to play them all. And you know, there were a couple of three setters in there. It must be quite testing, and I was quite encouraged for him, really. I think he would have been very frustrated with having won a comfortable second set against Korda and then really just letting Korda get away with it. Korda played very well in that deciding set, but I think that would have frustrated him. But there was some encouragement there, I thought, for Murray.
Yeah, agreed. Great intel, David. Thank you very much for your intel gathering. Over in Firenze, Felix Auger-Aliassime won his second career title. He's well and truly broken that finals duck, hasn't he? And he beat JJ Wolf 6-4, 6-4 in the final. David, points for you if you can tell me what the JJ stands for.
John Jeffrey. I've been watching JJ over the course of the last week.
Matt gave me this quiz yesterday and I said, Jeffrey John, and I've been kicking myself for the last 22 hours about it.
No, it is Jeffrey John.
Oh, I said the same as David then.
Yes.
Oh,
I'm all at sea.
Oh, no. I messed it up.
Well, so did I, David. We messed it up in the same way.
I thought he was quite good, actually, this last week. Because I was... Somebody says his name, aside from getting it wrong, I tend to think of mullet and a bit of a showman, really, who's more interested in making people go wow than actually winning tennis points. And I think that there is some truth to that. But goodness me, he packaged it all well this last week. I saw him beat Alexander Bublik. I saw him win a couple of the matches that he got through. And I think that's his first ATP final. He was really, really good. And I like the fact that he's just... He still hasn't changed, though, in terms of his approach. He's still sticking his chest out and walking around like he owns the place. And I just like watching him.
Matt, I think it's quite a big deal for Felix Auger-Aliassime to have won another final and prove that previous duck breaking wasn't an aberration and this is a new trend that he's on now. And that's that past trend of losing in finals and really, frankly, dropping the ball in finals, maybe even on occasion laying eggs, is well and truly behind him now. That feels quite big.
Yeah, I think so, because on the one hand, you could look at this as just a title that he should have won. You know, he was probably the best player in the draw and certainly heavily favoured in the final. But as you said, that record was, 1-9 in finals going into this one? And therefore, I don't think we can underestimate the significance for him of being able to win a final. Just the more he does it, the more it's going to help him, I'm sure. It has to be a confidence boost. And I thought he played really well all week. Certainly, I watched him in the semi-finals against Lorenzo Musetti, and I thought he was fantastic. You know, I always feel this with Auger-Aliassime. You can tell quite early on how he's playing. And he was just immediately hitting the ball cleanly and confidently and not spraying it all over the place. And his backhand in particular, I thought, was excellent. And yeah, he's really great when he imposes himself like that and he is playing well. He's a very, very tough guy to stop, especially in those conditions, I think. And he's also well in the hunt for ATP finals qualification. It's going to be tight. I think he's playing all the weeks. He's not Andy Murray with a metal hip worried about his load. He's just going right through this this indoor swing and is going to play as much as he can to try and be there.
Load me up, says Felix. Just on that semi-final, Matt, the win over Lorenzo Musetti, I was only following that on live scores because I was at a London Film Festival screening on Saturday night watching an absolute turkey. on paper, I don't want to be mean. It was My Policeman. It's one of Harry Styles' forays into acting.
I was hearing a review of that the other day, and it seemed to tally with your verdict.
He's not the only one at fault, I would say.
They seem to think he was.
And it's a very well I'm a big Harry Styles fan, as you know, but when you're casting an Englishman in a role, you don't expect him to struggle with an English accent. And I think that was quite a big problem. Okay. Anyway, he wasn't the only one at fault. It caused me to miss the meat on the bones of Musetti and Auger-Aliassime. From the scores, it looked like just a fairly routine win for Auger-Aliassime. But Matt, there was a little more going on than that, as I understand it.
Yes, that's right, because Musetti had been playing brilliantly. He'd had a brilliant week. I saw him play Mackenzie McDonald and he was just in electrifying form, just hitting winners everywhere. And I think he was kind of the only Italian who did well in Florence and they were really getting behind him. There was a great atmosphere in his matches and he started this against Auger-Aliassime in pretty good form as well. And it was a big occasion. The atmosphere was up. And then he went down a break, Musetti, and called for a medical timeout, had some treatment on his chest, And I must admit, at the time, I thought it was a sort of physical injury. But then it wasn't really manifesting itself in rallies and in shots. He didn't look in physical pain. He just didn't look quite right. And it ended up being a pretty routine win for Ogier Aliassime. And then it came out afterwards that Musetti said in his press conference that he thinks it was a panic attack that he had. And he said he's never suffered them before, but it was clear to him that it wasn't something that he was going to be able to overcome during the match. He was just having difficulties breathing and wasn't feeling right, and it was going to take him time to get back to normal. He did say that he didn't want to retire because of the fans, which, you know, given Musetti's career, is an excellent quote. Because of the support he was receiving and because it was this sort of amazing spectacle. So I felt for him because he clearly wasn't feeling right, and maybe the sensible thing to do would have been to retire. But he did play through, and yeah, I just think it's in the same way we said that it was important that Simona Halep spoke about that after she suffered a panic attack during the French Open. I think it's the same here as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Hear, hear.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court Susan Longlin all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TennisPod20 for 20% off your annual subscription. The ATP Tour stays in Italy this week. There is a pop-up 250 event in Napoli or Naples, depending on what part of the world you're looking at it from. It is not going to plan in old Napoli, is it, Matt? Lovely part of the world. I went on holiday there not long ago. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I should recommend some sightseeing to the players that are in the draw, because they ain't playing tennis today. It's fair to say it's not going to plan.
No, there are some fundamentals that you need for staging a tennis tournament, and a court is high on the list, and they don't currently have one because the players rocked up at this event, you know, end of last week to start the qualifying and practicing, and it was a disaster. I mean, literally, they were leaving footprints on the court like you would leave a footprint in sand. It was that bad, and they had to postpone the qualifying, play that off-site. The main draw was meant to be starting today, but it's not, because they are apparently shipping the court from Florence over to Naples so that it can be reused this week.
This is very Champions Tour, isn't it, David?
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, I've stood on the Royal Albert Hall court as it was being built, and then, like, half an hour after they've said it's finished, I've walked onto the court with players, and they've they've pointed out gaps between the sort of two tiles in the court. Yeah. That if the ball hits one of those, yeah, it's going to deviate.
There's a sinkhole over there. Yeah.
actually, funny enough, in I went to Naples, I think, in 2014 for the Davis Cup tie with Italy and Great Britain. And I think that that was a temporary kind of pop-up clay court that they used for that. They're a really nice stadium that they built for it right by the sea. It was a beautiful setting, but they had loads of issues with the court surface during that, and they just kept having to bring a bloke on with a wheelbarrow to sort of fill in holes with the clay top dressing. And but that's the most serious of its type on the regular tour that I can ever remember. I mean, there was the time where Andy Roddick walked over with a referee at the US Open once to show how the court was basically breaking before his very eyes, and there was water coming up from underneath, and they had to he then marched everybody off to another court nearby to play at the US Open. But to have a tour event unable to be played for a couple of days like this, I mean, they're still in qualifying round one today, so not ideal.
And you think they would be thinking, well, let's we've got no court, let's steer away from other areas of controversy. Well, that is not what old Napoli have been thinking, because Andrea Seppi, an Italian man, is retiring at the end of this season and has been denied a wild card into both the events last week in Florence and this week in Naples. And as I'm sure you can imagine, he's extremely unhappy about that. He wanted to retire in front of his home fans. And John Millman is unhappy about it as well. He says, Andrea Seppi, not getting a wild card into a tour event in Italy to end his career is a joke. The guy has had a brilliant career, represented his country at Davis Cups and Olympic Games, and the Italian Federation can't give a wild card. Pretty pathetic. So it's all going brilliantly in Napoli.
Looking forward to Turin.
I haven't seen the tournament's reasoning for not giving him a wild card at this point. And I mean, I am mindful that they've got a lot of players there, and if they need to give them to up-and-coming players...
Luca Nardi has got one.
Well, there you go. I could understand that, but the nostalgic sense in me is that this guy, 38 years of age, has given an awful lot to tennis and to tennis in Italy, and it would have been nice to have given him a wild card.
Agreed. There is also ATP events, as we said, in Antwerp this week. Hubert Hurkacz and Felix Auger-Aliassime are the top seeds. Jack Draper against Jenson Brooksby is a first round. Sam Wawrinka against Richard Gasquet is a first round in a sort of throwback single-handed backhand off. And in Stockholm, we have Stefanos Tsitsipas, Cam Norrie, Francis Tiafoe and Denis Shapovalov as the top four seeds. And how about this for a round one? Tommy Paul against Leo Borg, of being Bjorn Borg's son fame.
Yeah.
He's not quite happening, is he, Leo
Borg? Not yet. 19.
No.
So maybe wait. He's ranked 577 in the world at the moment.
We'll watch closely.
Bit of work to do.
With Anna Blinkova's Instagram.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that there's the WTA 1000 event in Guadalajara this week. Badosa and Sabalenka, the top two seeds. First round matchups include Azarenka against Zhong Shuai, Elena Rybakina against Karolina Pliskova, Jill Teichman against Bianca Andreescu. I'm definitely up for that. Belinda Bencic against Leila Fernandez, and Kanepi against Samsonova. And yeah, the fact that 17 players can still qualify for the WTA finals makes that a thrilling week, I think, in Guadalajara. Few other bits of business for you from the week that's just passed in tennis. We've had the news that Emma Raducanu is going to start working with the fitness trainer Jez Green. Of course, formerly worked with Andy Murray for so many years. Had a spell with Alexander Zverev as well. Sort of brought him on from junior to you know, proper seasoned senior, I suppose. He's been working with Dominic Thiem and is still working with Dominic Thiem currently, but will be advising Emma Raducanu in the weeks ahead. And this has come in tandem with the news that Dmitry Tursunov is no longer working with the Emma Raducanu team. They were working together at the US Open and in the couple of tournaments in the lead up to that. It was only ever announced as a trial arrangement, but it's obviously not being continued beyond this. I mean, Jez Green is a great appointment. That's the long and short of it. It's clear that, you know, I don't think it's as simple to say there's a lack of fitness there, but there's something going wrong with her body. Her body keeps breaking down. And Jez Green, you know, as I did a ham-fisted job of trying to describe with Alexander Zverev, is great at turning young players into solid, hardened pros.
Yeah, I would back him to make her the robust athlete she needs to be to withstand the tour, and also to have the confidence in her own body to that she will be able to withstand the tour. Because I think there must be a lot in the mind as well as the body about any twinge you get. I mean, how do you know if you get pain, whether it's serious or not? I think Jez is so experienced, he'll be able to help her with that. Certainly the sort of person I would want to have working with her. Tursunov made the decision himself that he wanted to work with another player, which who knows who would be a good fit for Emma Raducanu as a coach. I certainly don't, but I think she's already ticked off the most important appointment there on paper.
Agreed. There was an Australian Open launch and the most significant piece of news coming out of that is that the Australian Open won't be lobbying for Novak Djokovic either way to be able to play the Australian Open. Craig Tiley said, "It's not a matter we can lobby on. Novak and the federal government need to work out the situation and then we'll follow any instruction after that. It's a matter that definitely stays between the two of them, and then depending on the outcome of that, we would welcome him at the Australian Open." And a reminder that it is nothing to do with COVID or his vaccination status now, which is potentially denying him entry into the Australian Open. It's the fact that he has been deported. He has a deportation on his record. And that, by the letter of the law, means you are denied entry to the country for, I believe it's 5 years until 2025 it is. He's banned from re-entering Australia. So he personally can lobby on the matter, but Tennis Australia won't be doing so. And look, as far as I can tell, nothing is going to change in that situation between now and the Australian Open. I see no reason why that decision can't be made soon. And we can all be prevented from what we had to endure at the start of this year. I include Novak Djokovic and ourselves in that. Nobody wants to go through anything remotely like that again. So I would just ask that the decision be made and stuck to, and that be that. We've had the news from Patrick Mouratoglou, who says, "While Simona Halep takes some time to recover, she encouraged me to seek a new collaboration. Today, I'm pleased to announce that I'm joining Holger Rune's team. I'm really excited to start working with Holger. We've had a special bond since the day we met when he was just 13. So, yep, that's a new team. David, you love team names. Have you got one for those two?
Prune.
That's actually quite good. We've got baby news. We have a Gems Life baby.
Aww.
Born to Alina Svitolina and Gael Monfils, Sky Monfils. There have been some very heartwarming posts from both members of Gems Life. Some congratulations to them. Congratulations also to Daniil Medvedev, who's had a very surprise baby. I'm not sure anybody knew that that was on the cards.
I mean, him.
Obviously he did, okay. But I love that it's, you know, been completely private. That's not a criticism at all, but was certainly a surprise. Less so the Rafael Nadal baby.
Very unsurprising,
there's a new Rafael Nadal in town, folks, and it's Rafael Nadal II. So congratulations to everybody involved there. And a couple of other points, David, that I want to come to you on, both of them. First of all, a really distressing one, actually, a story in the Times today about a 21-year-old British player called Tanisha Desanayake. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. She has had to retire from the sport at the age of 21 because of long COVID. 2.5 years ago, she was competing at the Sunderland ITF event alongside Emma Raducanu, and here she is, not that long later, being forced to retire from the sport. It's I know this one's close to home for you, David, and it's tough to hear about.
It really is. I read this morning. It's written by Stu Fraser, and he's done a 20-minute Zoom call with her, which she conducted from bed, and she said that she has had to plan her week in order to be able to do that Zoom call, and that meant 2 days of rest and 2 days built in to recover from doing a 20-minute Zoom call. This is a professional athlete who 2 years ago was full of fitness and full of hopes and full of expectation of a successful tennis career, and she's had her life just decimated by this awful condition, long COVID, which I have a very mild case of, relatively speaking. Now, I have to say I had a little relapse of it a week ago, and it's been horrendous, to be honest, in many ways. But, you know, I've also had 3 months of feeling absolutely fine, and I can't imagine how she feeling like that all the time for 2 years. And she talks in this piece about having managed to go on holiday to Portugal this year, and she was in a wheelchair while she was there, but she wanted to go for a change of scenery, and there were bars and shops just around the corner from where she was staying, and she couldn't go to any of them because she just couldn't handle it physically. It's just too much, and I'm just desperately sorry for her. I desperately hope that enough advances can be made in medication and understanding of this condition in order to help people like her, and I just wish her well. It's something that I recommend anybody read, because people don't know what this condition is doing to people, and you go to the doctor and they don't know what to say to you. They don't know what it is. I don't think a lot of the time they even believe you. But she's an example of somebody who's had her life ruined, and I just hope it is something that can be rebuilt for her, because it's horrendous.
Absolutely, and I think there's a lot of people out there that think, you know, oh, COVID's over, let's forget about it, and I understand that instinct. We all want to pretend it hasn't happened, but there are so many millions of people, and I'm sure thousands of our listeners, living with significant effects of it, and, you know, you haven't been forgotten. You haven't been forgotten, certainly not by us anyway. So we're thinking of all of you. And we certainly wish Tanisha very well indeed. David, one last point from you. Now, I don't want you to, in your slightly delicate state post long COVID relapse, I don't want you to expend too much energy on this. But I do want you to expend some, because David treated us on the WhatsApp group this week to the most wonderful rant. And I'd like you to just create that, recreate that, David, for our listeners, if you will.
Well, I don't know whether I can in quite the gusto with which I presented it to you yesterday, because that was very much in the moment. But it was about the inverted commas sport of pickleball.
Already savage.
Which I have never played, but which looks like fun, and which is something I understand is a version of tennis that looks like mini tennis for kids to me, but with table tennis rackets or something like that. There are some similarities to the sport of paddle that is becoming very popular in Europe, and except that that's on an enclosed space, more like a sort of glass type squash court, isn't it?
It's not played on tennis courts.
Right. Okay.
So crucially, you know, you're not having to take away tennis court time.
Which pickleball
to create is. Pickleball
and
time.
Pickleball is an American, appears to be an American.
It could only be American with that name.
And look, I think it as a pastime and as a bridge to tennis, or as a thing to do once you are too old to play tennis, or not good enough to play tennis, looks fantastic to me. And I'm sure, and I know that there are professional limits to the game as well, and they're trying to build it, and I'm sure there's great skill involved and athleticism and all the rest of it. Fine. I am getting rather sick of hearing and reading about tennis players past and present telling me how amazing pickleball is.
And by rather sick, folks, he means incandescent.
Now, it may be all of those things, but a lot of these people are investing themselves in it, whether they're playing it or investing in it as a sport for the future. I know that they've recently announced a Major League Pickleball or something, in which Tom Brady, the NFL quarterback, has invested in, and LeBron James. And it was brought to my attention because Kim Clijsters and James Blake, two people I have enormous amounts of time for as people and former champions, have also invested in it. And inevitably, and understandably, they are talking a lot about it as a result of their investment. I get that. And it does look like a fun pastime, as I say. It looks like a good time. But I would rather hear former tennis players telling me how great tennis is, to be honest, and trying to encourage people to watch that and getting excited about that more often than pickleball. The Tennis Channel have broadcast pickleball tournaments. The Tennis Magazine, clues in the title, folks, Tennis Magazine, had it on its cover in June. I was reading an exchange around about the time that all this was going on. Andy Roddick said about it, and I think that this sums it up just about perfectly. He says, pickleball is like tennis, but with no learning curve, movement, spin, or speed. He said, that being said, it takes up way less space than a tennis court, and it is fun. But I question whether or not, he said on Twitter too, somebody was asking about it and taking him to task. He says, I question whether or not it'll survive as a pro sport, because we generally don't want to watch something that we can do pretty easily. I get its value recreationally, for sure. And that's how I would feel about it. Now, and I know I must sound like a right old stick in the mud to people who like pickleball and have enjoyed it and think, well, what's your problem? Just let them get on with it. And that's absolutely fine. But stop sticking it in my face as a tennis fan or as somebody who cares about the sport of tennis and holding it up as something that's better than tennis. It's not better than tennis, all right? It's different to it. It might be a pathway to tennis, or it might be something you play after you can't play tennis anymore because you're not able to run around enough. I don't know. But leave it. All right, just leave it. It's a little bit how I felt when the Ultimate Tennis Showdown was doing its rounds. And I think what it is, it's the making out that this is the next big thing and we should all stop what we're doing because this is happening and this is better and more important than what tennis already is. And I mean, I think the Ultimate Tennis Showdown, they wrote that their goal was to build a long-term international league of showdown series events that will offer an alternative to the traditional shores. Eventually, events will take place all over the world. UTS is not designed to be a one-time hit. If UTS is a movie, we mean to make it a saga. Or think of it as the Netflix next binge-worthy TV show. Well, UTS last took place 17 months ago, so I don't think that it is the next big thing or a saga for the future. So, tennis is, let's get excited about tennis, particularly if we're on the Tennis Bloody Podcast.
Right, David, you have earned yourself a week-long lie down. Matt, he's trampled on some of your turf there with a UTS rant.
I love the way that rant developed and just took UTS along with it. That was brilliant, David.
That was really special.
Are we to assume you won't be watching Noah Rubin try his hand at pickleball, David? That was the big news this week.
Probably not. And Sam Querrey's apparently entering as well, who's just retired. from tennis. And again, good luck to them. I hope they have a lovely time. I hope they make some money, all the rest of it. But don't forget where you came from.
And on that note, folks, we draw this epic edition of the Tennis Podcast to a close. April and Phantom are the cats lucky enough to be mascot to this episode. They are litter mates, so they're siblings. I really do enjoy animal siblings. And they were rescued together. Oh, this is loveliness. Owned by AJ Nathan. They're both grey tabby domestic shorthairs. There'll be a picture of them in our newsletter. They're adorable. They look like kittens to me, AJ. Are they very young? Let us know. Do get in touch and let us know how old they are and just generally how they're getting on. April and Phantom, thank you.
AJ, hopefully not a pickleball player. Be an unfortunate episode, wouldn't it?
David has his mascot Darwin.
Darwin,
I think you've done well this week. I've got Carter. We were very much let down by Matteo Berrettini this week, Carter. I can't remember who he lost to, but he shouldn't have been losing it. Matt has the dearly departed Gerald, who thought he was onto something. Matt did when Danielle Collins was 4-2 in the third set of her semi-final, and alas, did not come off.
It was the rain again.
That's why he was so angry last night.
Yes. Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss are sponsors to Billie Jean. Chris Albert Lee and Kyle Weingartner are our executive producers and all-around top blokes. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
We do. We have Emma Boylan in Dublin.
All right, Emma.
Hello, Emma. Very Tennessee name these days, Emma.
Yeah.
I'll say it then, Raducanu. and Dublin, lovely place.
Yeah.
Should we have our usual when we have an Irish shout out? We always go, why aren't there Irish tennis players?
Yeah, why?
Let us know, Emma.
Sort it out, Emma.
Thank you. Thank you for your support.
We've also got Amy Greer in Vail, Colorado.
All right, Amy.
Hello, Amy. There must be tennis Amys.
Amy Frazier from back in the day, I can tell you. I watched some of her play during Tennis Relived, I think. I don't quite know why, but I did.
Just for kicks.
Have you done the Tennis Relived episode that we weren't on?
Probably. Thank you very much, Amy.
And finally, we've got Susanna Hogendorn from Madison, Wisconsin.
Wow.
Matt, that's the capital of Wisconsin, I believe.
Fantastic name.
And Susanna says that her and her son, Bennett, are long-time listeners.
Hey!
I'm getting anxious at American shout-outs now because it sort of increases the chances that they might be into pickleball.
I've just completely alienated massive swathes of our
audience. Look, we're not saying don't play pickleball. If Susanna or your son Bennett are pickleball fans, then sure, that's fine.
I wonder how many emails we'll get this week, Matt. All right, Bennett.
Hello to you both. Thank you ever so much for your support. If you would like to get yourself a shout out on the Tennis Podcast, you can do so by becoming a friend of the Tennis Podcast. And the link to do that is in our show notes. There are also intros up for grabs. And as of next year, there will be new everything up for grabs, including those much coveted pet mascot slots that always fly off the shelves. We'll be back next week with a new weekly tennis podcast, and we'll also soon be recording a new friends podcast because we've had a lot of requests for Matt's takes on Roger Federer's retirement and the Laver Cup in general, because of course, Matt, you were laid low with COVID during that time. Very pleased that you're back to full health now. And yeah, you can give the people what they want with your Federer takes.
Mm.
David and I will just be along for the ride.
I was in a strange state during the Laver Cup, but I remember Ellie Goulding. I remember Team World winning.
I'll stop you there, Matt. That's really all that's important. Mm. Does everything now feel like a COVID fever dream?
Totally. I mean, I think she felt like that for everyone who was there as well.
Right then, so that's coming soon for Friends of the Pod. Make sure you subscribe to the newsletter if for some inexplicable reason you haven't already. And the link to do that is also in our show notes. Thanks for listening, folks. We will be back next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.